There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to Drive Live. Right now we're heading to London and we can join Ollie Barrett on the line. Hi, Ollie.
Hi, guys.
Good to have you on the programme. We're going to get straight into it because I think we might spend a few minutes talking to you about football. I know you enjoy it quite a lot. So let's start in Italy, first of all, Ollie.
Yes, there's been a big controversy, a big outcry today over some comments made by the new interior minister in Italy, Matteo Salvini, who is from one of the right-wing populist parties that now make up the new Italian government. And Matteo Salvini suggested that he wanted there to be a census of all of the Roma community inside Italy, with a view to non-Italians that came up in that census being potentially deported from the country. Now, that led to a lot of criticism very quickly. He then was forced to respond and said that his only ambition in all of this, with this idea, was to protect Roma children in Italy. Many of the Roma Gypsy community in the country, tens of thousands of them, around 130,000, it's thought, live in unlicensed camps on outskirts of Italian cities, and Matteo Salvini suggesting there should be some kind of census of them. As I say, that led to lots of criticism, not least from some groups in the country which said that it had the feeling of similar race laws brought in by Mussolini in 1938. Criticism from other quarters as well, but then also we heard from the centre-left Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni, who had led it to Italy for 2 years. He was very critical in a tweet. We also had then the other coalition party that makes up the coalition with Matteo Salvini's party, saying that they would not let this happen, that it would be unconstitutional in Italy. So it's been a huge ongoing row in Italy all of today. It appears that Matteo Salvini's idea will not come to fruition in any meaningful way, and certainly if you listen to his coalition partners, would be unconstitutional anyway, but has fed in to an ongoing debate inside Italy about migration. That has partly been intensifying because of the blocking by Italy of a number of charity rescue ships that have been rescuing migrants in the Mediterranean who've been coming from the Libyan coast in that direction. So all of that feeding into that debate and the controversy too. But as I say, Matteo Salvini backing away from this idea now, but it certainly has prompted a pretty furious debate today.
Ollie, another story that you are following, obviously, is Brexit. I won't be the first person to refer to Brexit as tennis in one form or another. It's just the problem, seems to me, that the rally is ever lengthening.
That's exactly right. We are in that ping-pong part of legislation now, where the Brexit bill that is the government is trying to get through Parliament is now ping-ponging back and forth between the Commons and the Lords, with the upper chamber trying to revise various bits of the legislation, MPs and the lower chamber trying to amend various bits of the legislation. There is one the Conservative Party rebel that attention is focused on at the moment, Dominic Grieve. He's been trying to get an amendment to the Brexit legislation that would guarantee some kind of so-called meaningful vote for the Commons once Theresa May reaches a deal with the European Union. He was offered a compromise by the government, which he accepted, but it didn't appear to be what he thought he had signed up for. So the issue is still very much live. He insists he's not trying to micromanage negotiations or to try and weaken Theresa May, the British Prime Minister's hand in those negotiations. But the government still hope to face him and his supporters down. The fact that Theresa May is in such a weak position heading into another round of negotiations with Brussels ahead of another key European summit coming up this month as well has led to further speculation that perhaps she might lose her leadership at some point if she can't keep those two Brexiteer and Remainer wings of her party happy as negotiations with the European Union continue. As I say, the legislation moving through the Commons and the Lords this week, there is one particularly crucial vote on Wednesday, which if Theresa May loses will represent another serious blow to her authority. If she wins it, she will feel happier, let's say, heading into the next summit in Brussels, at which she hopes to reach further agreements with the European Union's negotiating team.
And Ollie, there's an ongoing court case at the Old Bailey where a man plotted to kill the UK Prime Minister in an attack.
Yes, that is certainly what the court has been hearing. This is the trial of Naimur Zakaria Rahman, who's 20 years old and from London, and the prosecution in his trial on two terror charges, which he denies, has been saying that he did have a plan to inflict lethal violence. This plan, the court heard, was found by an MI5 agent who'd been posing online as an official from a militant group and was chatting to him via a messaging app. The prosecution telling the court that the man, Naimur Zakaria Rahman, had in one message been talking about how the bomber in the Manchester attacks had done well. The jury has also been hearing that Mr. Rahman was saying that he was just days away from an attack before being arrested in November last year. He's charged with preparing terrorist acts by conducting reconnaissance, recording a pledge of allegiance, and delivering a rucksack and jacket to be fitted with explosives. He's also charged with helping another defendant to try and join a militant group by recording a sponsorship video. As I say, he denies both counts, but in terms of the specifics of the attack that the prosecution claimed he was preparing, it was to involve, the court has been told, an attack on Downing Street, a suicide attack involving an explosion, but also knives and a direct attempt on the life of the British Prime Minister. As I say, he denies the charges and that trial continues.
Ollie, we live in less formal times, probably reasonable to say, I think, and this is an interesting story on a number of different levels, but if you don't address somebody by the appropriate salutation, Mr. President, and you use a vernacular nickname, just who's in the right here? The President for getting upset, or is the boy wrong for calling Mr. Macron Manu?
Well, let me tell you how this unfolded. Which it was at an event close to Paris at Mont Valérien Fort. It's a memorial which honours French resistance members who died during World War II. There were members of the public lined up to see the French President Emmanuel Macron as he attended this event. Behind the rope, one teenager sang a couple of lines from the Internationale, which is a socialist anthem, which was clearly designed to poke a little bit of fun at Emmanuel Macron. And then he said, you know, the translation at least from French, "How's it going, Manu?" Manu being the nickname for people who are called Emmanuel, as the French president is. But the French president did not think this was amusing at all. He said, "No, you can't do that. No, 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 no." The teenager appeared to be slightly embarrassed by the strong rebuke from the president, and he said, "Sorry, Mr. President, but that wasn't to be left there by Emmanuel Macron. He went on, 'You're here at an official ceremony. You should behave. You can play the fool, but today it's the Marseillaise, so you call me Mr. President or Sir. Okay, there you go." And he told the student as well that things needed to be done in the right order, that he needed to get his degree first and then learn how to feed himself, and then he'd be in a position to lecture others. So some are suggesting this is a touch of an overreaction, but Emmanuel Macron certainly feeling at this particular event that he needed to be treated with a certain amount of respect.
The youth needs to have their manners instilled by the leader of the country. Just very briefly, Ollie, I presume you were watching the football last night?
I was. Do I have to be brief?
I have to say, Ollie, well, I had the feeling you'd be happy to talk about this. I saw a couple of tweets from you last night, and I have to say, following you on Twitter is a delight to be recommended. However, let me start with one tweet, so that you're there with your two sons. Lovely picture, Dad about to watch the game. But your tweet just after the Tunisia-England game got me, and it's just four words, and I guess you join most people in England today in saying this, but you just said, "I really like football."
I do really like it, and I'm particularly enjoying this World Cup, and that enjoyment is obviously now increased by the fact that England have won the first game, because we're so bad at winning the first game that, you know, the pressure is always completely intense from that point on. Now you feel a sense of optimism about the second game, and It was fun. The other thing you'll have seen from my Twitter feed is, but my complete lack of understanding about VAR and whether anyone knows how that's supposed to be working, or if it is working. I'm not sure that the officials even know what the system is supposed to be, but I'm certainly no wiser a week or so into the tournament.
I don't think you're alone in that at all, Ollie.
That's a big club. Welcome to it, Ollie.
Yes.
Barrett.
Oh, well, exactly. Looking forward to talking to you next week when we see how England have fared again, and hopefully you'll be in an upbeat mood again.
Well, very briefly, the interesting thing will be if England have won both games and Belgium have, and the Germans and perhaps the Brazilians are going to end up in the other side of the draw, we might have a game where Belgium and England play each other, both wanting to lose.
Yes, that's very true.
How remarkable the way this World Cup could work out. Ollie Barrett in London, always good to talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.